Hello, Champions Club members. Welcome to part 7 of Midland National's amazing audio series on characteristics of greatness. This is Jerry Blair, the Chief Distribution Officer at Midland National. It is our goal to make sure that you know you're not just a member of Salmon's Financial Group, you're part of the Midland National family that cares about you as well as your personal and professional development. To prove it to you, we enlisted the help of 9-time New York Times best-selling author and acclaimed speaker, Don Yeager. Through exclusive conversations with some of the greatest athletes and sports minds of all time, Don identified 16 characteristics that help unlock a person's ability to go from good to great. I'm excited to have him share more of these amazing stories that are sure to inspire, enrich, alter, or in some cases provide clarity in your life. As a benefit to you, please know that the lessons provided in this audio series have enhanced the quality of work in both individual and team environments. It has unlocked the keys to success for many companies worldwide, and I'm confident it can have the same impact for you. Thank you again for taking the time to incorporate this into your listening library. Now I'd like to officially introduce my friend, Don Yeager. But to do so properly, I get to have a little help from great winners like Shaquille O'Neal, Landon Donovan, Michael Orr, Tony Siragusa, Bob Costas, Dick Vitale, and the late, great John Wooden. It is quite the introduction. Let's see if you can pick out the various voices. Enjoy.
You're in for a real treat today.
Your speaker today, Don Yeager,
is known in the sports world
as one of the most respected and nationally acclaimed writers in our country.
Don Yeager is the author of more than a dozen books,
including 8 New York Times bestsellers.
Don's books, including the one he wrote with me, have sold more than 2 million copies and have been translated into more than a dozen languages.
Don began his career at a newspaper in Texas
and rose to become associate editor of Sports Illustrated magazine, and that's how I met him.
Hey, few people can really experience the kind of exciting resume that Don has had. He's a PTP, baby!
In his 25 years as a journalist, Don has worked with some of the greatest champions of our time. Michael Jordan, Mia Hamm, Serena Williams, and me.
He's been a guest on just about every major national television show, from Nightline to Good Morning America to Oprah.
This is Don Yeager, who did that that article I was telling you about that's in Sports Illustrated on newsstands now. You should really get it if you're a parent who has a child who's in sports.
He lived with my father, Walter Payton, writing his autobiography while Dad courageously battled cancer.
He even met with the President of the United States in the Oval Office.
Using lessons learned from the world of sports,
Don shares the formulas he's seen and the great winners he's worked with,
and explains how that formula can work for each of us.
As I said, you're in for a real treat.
He's awesome, baby, with a capital A!
Now please welcome my friend.
My friend.
My friend.
Now please welcome my friend, Don Yeager.
Hi friends, this is Don Yeager, and I want to thank you for joining me in this passion point of mine centered around unlocking true greatness. The study of greatness has been a career-long pursuit fueled by countless relationships, conversations, and lessons learned from the greatest leaders and winners of all time. Identifying the traits that led to their success and sustain that success led me to distilling 16 characteristics of greatness, highlighting what makes the great ones great. Each characteristic is an absolute lesson for me in what allowed these true champions to go from good to great. I should note that each lesson also dives deeply into qualities that could enhance your personal or professional life greatly. I encourage you to prepare your mind for this next dialogue. It's a concept mastered by some of the greatest winners of our lifetime. Characteristic of greatness number 3, believe. If you Googled the word believe, the verbatim definition is to have confidence in the truth, the existence, or the reliability of something, although without absolute proof that one is right in doing so. It's pretty simple, right? Be sure of something that you cannot physically prove. Having religious guidance in life is one thing, but allowing faith to factor into your business life
or the way you lead others often feels taboo in a world of political correctness. But in this study of greatness, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more consistent characteristic of greatness among the most successful winners than belief. Better yet, the belief in a higher power. That there's something out there greater than us and greater than the task or challenge we face. Now, before I go any further, I must tell you this is not a lesson intended to convert you to any one religion over the other. This is not intended to be your confessional or repentance for sins. Simply put, this lesson specifically depicts how the belief in a higher power has completely unlocked sustained success for many of the great winners in this study of greatness. In fact, here's an excerpt from a keynote speech I delivered to an audience in Costa Rica on this very topic. May it provide value in your own ability to go from good to great. Characteristic of greatness number 3, believe. When I think about the definition of true greatness, when I think of people that I would tell you live every one of these 16 characteristics, that they're an easy fit into the mold of what it takes to achieve at a high level and what it is that allows them to do it so significantly. One of the guys that really stands out to me is a United States football coach named Tony Dungy. Some of you might remember him. He became the first African-American football coach to lead a team to the Super Bowl championship, the first to win a Super Bowl championship. And on many ways, he was a record breaker. He set all kinds of standards. In fact, on his way to greatness, he was a college quarterback at the University of Minnesota. Again, he was a quarterback, though, back in a day when a lot of NFL teams, a lot of National Football League teams, weren't really sure about giving that position to an African-American at the highest level. And so Tony Dungy actually made a decision that he would change positions because he wanted to play his sport at his highest level. It was more important for him to figure out how to fit into the team than to say, I'm going to be the quarterback. I need to be the centerpiece of the offense. And he did. He changed positions. He actually went into the NFL. And became not just successful as a player, but then as an assistant coach. He kept climbing the ranks of the coaching world in professional football. And by the time he'd gotten his first job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the team was poised, and he did some pretty great things. But he lost his job. They fired him because they didn't. Even though they had a lot of talent, and they were doing well. They weren't doing well enough, and the coaches fired. The owners fired him. But he goes on. He finds another job. And that job is with the Indianapolis Colts, where he's paired with maybe the best quarterback in the history of professional football, Peyton Manning. While paired with Peyton Manning, the two of them take off, and things start to really come together. That team is humming. They are just playing at a really high level. In fact, in 2005, the team started 13-0. They hadn't lost a game. Week after week, they were winning, and it looked like they might become only the second team in the history of professional football in the United States to go the entire season without a loss. But in that 14th week, they actually lost a game. They lost the game, but that wasn't. But as dejecting as that was, and they were a little bit upset. They weren't sure exactly what it meant and whether or not how you rebound out of that situation. Days later, that game grew to mean nothing. Because days later, Tony Dungy's son, James, decided that the battles that he was suffering with some mental disorders were too much for him, and he decided to take his own life. So Coach Dungy, there he was, the prime of his career, doing the most amazing things, a man of incredible faith. Faith being a centerpiece of who he was. He believed that everything was destined and predestined through the faith that he had held. He suddenly was a man without a son. It was a crusher. Tony Dungy wasn't sure exactly whether he could even ever coach again. The players rallied. They wanted him. They wanted him back. But in doing that, some really amazing things happened as the team rallied around the coach and the standards that he held for himself. But one of the things that so many people stood out looking for was here was a man who had great faith. Again, as I said, centerpiece of who he was. And how do you explain why something like that happens to a man who is as incredible as he is, right? And so Tony Dungy began answering that question. There became a lot of questions people were asking him about how does your faith answer that question? How do you answer the idea that there might be that something you would never have expected should happen to you did? And Tony Dungy's answer was extraordinary, because he didn't just talk about this. He lived this. He lived this in such a high level that it became a key piece of who he was. Tony Dungy actually, despite this tragedy, despite the loss, he realized that this was actually a greater chance for him to make a statement than any football game, any win, any undefeated season, any Super Bowl he could ever achieve. That this was a moment when he had a chance to make a statement about what he really stood for. And Tony Dungy did. He actually went out and he helped founded a group called All Pro Dad, encouraging other fathers on how to be a better father. Right? He used this moment not to sit in pity, not to ask the question of, my God, how can you do that to me? He used it instead as an opportunity to say, how can I do something for others? Right? How can I help change the dynamic for others? And in doing that, in creating this All Pro Dad, it's become this foundational movement in the United States among fathers, and it's a website that I would tell you any of you that are fathers would probably find great value in trying to learn from. But interesting in all of that, when asked that question, I had a chance to interview Tony Dungy not but a couple of years after his son passed away, and we're sitting and talking about this and about how faith. The role that faith played in his reaction to what happened to him, and he shared a story that ultimately I saw one of my colleagues at Sports Illustrated wrote. It's a story about how he turned this moment into an opportunity to share with others. Tony Dungy was routinely, as he was scouring newspapers throughout America, he was finding the names of fathers whose sons had made the same decision as his, fathers who had lost the most important gift in their life. And Tony Dungy was getting their phone number and calling them to offer support and advice. One of the most important men in the sporting world in the United States was picking up the phone, and this particular story is about a truck driver who's driving across the United States crushed because his son had made that decision not long before then, and Tony Dungy picked up the phone to call him, to encourage him. See, Tony Dungy believed before it was over that he actually said that had more to do with what ultimately became the success of his team. They would go on to win the Super Bowl. And in winning the Super Bowl, it was because his players all saw that Tony Dungy didn't talk it, he lived it, right? And what he said was important, he kept as important, even in the face of the most critical moment of his parenting life, right? Of his profession. That moment obviously could have changed the direction for everything, but Tony Dungy used it instead as a positive moment. And that's because Tony Dungy understood, and he actually had this great line in this conversation. He said, you know, if you don't believe in God, you will find yourself spending hours trying to understand things that can't be understood. That's the power of faith. Faith is really about understanding there are things out there that you can't. Faith requires that you can't understand things, that there may be things out there you can't ever figure out. You know, faith is kind of an awkward conversation in a corporate environment, right? I mean, we're always careful about it, but that's an absolute. You want to study these truly high achievers, these great winners. Almost every one of them have some level of faith. They believe in something bigger than themselves. Now, it may not be Tony Dungy's faith. It may not be my faith, but the faith that is significant in them is about the understanding that there is something bigger out there than them. And the truly great ones get that. They know how to use those moments. They use those moments to actually project that which is most important to them. And Tony Dungy did that in this way, not just through the creation of All Pro Dad, but through the phone calls he was making. Tony understood that lesson in faith was an absolute, that if you want to achieve at that high level, you have to believe there are some things you'll never understand. And the truly great ones do get that. Tony Dungy no longer stands on the sidelines of an NFL team, but he's still highly regarded as a mentor in the coaching realm.
His belief in a higher power freed him up to make decisions without allowing the worry and doubt to limit the scope of his decisions. But oftentimes, the great success stories, when it comes to belief, are not cookie-cutter, rinse-and-repeat concepts. Take a moment to think about it. How has belief shaped your life? How does faith factor into your decisions? Would believing in something greater than your own capacity provide any extra clarity in your life? Take a moment to reflect on whether you truly are believing that you can achieve sustained success. If not, that just might be what's limiting your greatness. The great ones, like Tony Dungy, know, without a shadow of a doubt, their belief in a higher power has unlocked their potential to go from good to great. That's characteristic of greatness number 3. Believe. I know I say it every time, but I can't thank you enough for making this study of greatness part of your listening library. Greatness requires proper nutrition, and your journey with me in this series is exactly the nutrition I speak of. Not what you eat or drink, but what you consume, what you learn. The great ones know each day is an opportunity to get another step closer to greatness. They make a conscious effort to gain something that can enhance their personal life or their professional life. Think about it. What are you reading? What else are you listening to? Proper nutrition can fuel your greatness. Thank you again for listening. I hope this characteristic has been of value to you. As always, I now challenge you to go be great every day.
Hello again, friends. This is Don Yeager, and I want to thank you for diving into this study of greatness with me. As you know, it's a study that's been a career-long pursuit of mine, fueled by countless relationships, conversations, and lessons learned from the greatest leaders and winners of all time. Identifying the traits that led to their success and sustained that success led me to distilling 16 characteristics of greatness, highlighting what makes the great ones great. As you may know, each characteristic is an absolute lesson, for me, in what allowed these true champions to go from good to great. So let's continue the series with characteristic of greatness number 10, when all else fails. Whether it was Mickey Mantle connecting on a curveball and sending it over the right field wall, Serena Williams sprinting along the baseline to send a forehand winner over the net, or LeBron James leaping high to block a shot in a game that eventually notched an NBA title for his native city, every champion, young or old, has come face-to-face with a tough challenge. Serena used a combination of talent and technique to win multiple titles at historic Wimbledon. Mantle used instinct and skill to smash home runs against pitchers whose only goal was to make him fail. It's how the great ones reacted to their challenges, big or small, that truly vaulted them from good to great. With good reason, we get enamored by the championship rings and trophies, but when you take a moment to sift through the victories, you just might discover the adjustments made that led to success. Sometimes, that minor tweak in one's approach could be the key that unlocks sustainable greatness. Baseball players, for instance, contend with failure much more frequently than success on a daily basis. Think about it. A person with a career batting average of 300 is considered Major League Baseball Hall of Fame material. But hitting 300 really means that for every 100 at-bats, that player was only successful 30 times. For every 10 times they step into the batter's box hoping to succeed, they fail 7 times. But every Hall of Fame baseball player I've talked to in this study of greatness has told me that they made minor tweaks somewhere in their career that snapped them out of a struggle and helped them fail far less than the rest. It's that one or two adjustments that unlocked for them the ability to go from average to extraordinary, from really good to the Hall of Fame. In the National Basketball Association, better known as the NBA, there's one Hall of Famer that is the embodiment of this lesson. Michael Jordan won 6 championship titles with the Chicago Bulls, and there's relatively little debate that he's the greatest NBA player ever. But in my conversations with MJ, I learned that it was an adjustment he made in his own technique that elevated him from an all-star to the greatest of all time. I talked about it in front of a live audience not too long ago. May this excerpt from my keynote speech provide value in your own ability to go from good to great, even in the face of failure. It's characteristic of greatness number 10, when all else fails. You guys remember we started this whole thing with Michael Jordan, right? Michael Jordan again. See, Jordan, without question, the greatest athlete of all time in the world of professional basketball. Many would argue maybe the greatest athlete of all time, no matter what sport. But Michael Jordan, it wasn't always that way. See, when Jordan entered the NBA as a rookie, he knew what he knew how to do really well, and that was to dunk the basketball, right? He could sky, he could get up in the air at such a, and he could stay there, it seemed like forever, in ways that he could dunk the basketball, and obviously there's a lot of flash that comes with that. In fact, his dunking became so famous that commercials were made and shoes were sold. Everybody wanted to be like Mike. But early in Michael Jordan's career, as I was saying, he was a guy that understood basically one really good thing. He knew how to dunk. But the game of basketball requires that you do a lot of other things too, right? You have to learn how to shoot from further away. And especially as Michael got older, he started to realize that became a more and more important part of what would become his success. Because, see, every time you go down there to go dunk the ball, there's an awful lot of other people that have an opportunity at that stage to hit you, knock you to the ground, maybe hurt you. And so there were an awful lot of times when Michael Jordan realized that the better option was not to take himself and his body down there. But early, he was, in those early years, he averaged, in his first few years, he could only hit about less than one out of five of his three-point shots. Because he'd spent so much time developing his dunk, he hadn't figured out how to develop that longer range shot. So other teams would leave him open out there because they knew that wasn't where he could have any skill set. So Michael Jordan, in order to understand what it took to become really successful, he had to adjust. He had to start teaching himself how to do other things. That what got him a commercial, what got him all those things that you saw at the beginning, were things that were not necessarily going to keep him at the very top of his game. So Michael Jordan, over the course of his time, he started working on that outside shot. And in fact, in working on that outside shot, it would lead him to one of the greatest shooting performances in the history of the NBA. An NBA championship finals game against the Portland Trail Blazers that some people call the Shrug Game. It's actually got a nickname because Michael Jordan hit so many shots that ultimately at one stage he turns to the TV announcers and he shrugs. He's like, I can't explain this, man. This is like, I'm like on tonight, right? You know? And that game, I've got a couple seconds of those shots to share with you here. Michael Jordan, that shrug game, set what at the time was an NBA Finals record for three-pointers hit in a game. Now remember, this is a guy that could hit only one of five when he was a rookie. But over the course of his career, he progressed. He taught himself. He worked in the offseason on a skill set that he didn't naturally have when he got to the NBA. He worked to develop his game in a way that allowed him to do something special. And in fact, by the time his championship years, remember he won six NBA titles, and by the time his championship years were done, in that last group of championship seasons, he was hitting 42.7% of his three-point shots. Remember, he was hitting less than 20% at the beginning of his career, and now he's at 42.7% late in his career.
He developed. He adjusted. He knew that what got him here last year, what made him successful at the beginning of his career, wasn't going to make him successful as time progressed. And as we think about our careers, as we look at what we're working on today, we need to know that what's making us successful today, what made us successful last year, isn't going to make us successful next year. And that our job is to figure out how do we create that new level? What's that next thing we're going to go learn? What's that next thing we're going to go learn at such a high level that ultimately we're going to do it and shrug because we're so good at it, right? That the ultimate challenge for us is to find ways to constantly adjust our game, to always be finding a way to recognize that what we're doing and the exceptional things that we might be doing today, awesome as they are, they're not going to be good enough next year. What are the adjustments we're going to make? How are we going to make ourselves? How are we going to make our game? How are we going to step it up? What are the lessons we're going to take from that?
Michael Jordan's willingness to embrace new methods quickly paved his championship pathway. MJ recognized that what turned him into a player that was fun to watch still needed a few adjustments in order to turn into the player that everyone watches. Popularity was nice, but sustained success was Jordan's bigger goal. When all else failed in his quest for success, Jordan's adjustment unlocked his legacy. Now is the time to ask yourself, are there any adjustments you need to make? Are there any Detroit Pistons caliber obstacles that are preventing you from truly tapping into your greatness? What can you learn now that can help you jump over that hurdle? What can you adapt into your personal life or your business that can set you up for the success you desire? You might be one slight adjustment away from overcoming failure and going from good to great. That's characteristic of greatness number 10, when all else fails. Hello again, friends. This is Don Yeager, and I can't thank you enough for joining me in the study of greatness. As you know, I've gleaned countless lessons learned from the greatest champions, winners, and leaders of all time, and distilled them into the 16 characteristics of greatness. I hope you agree that it's been an enjoyable journey through the 16 characteristics and that the absolutes I've shared in this series have been valuable in your own quest for high performance in your personal and professional life. With that said, let's finish the series with characteristic of greatness number 16, records are made to be broken. The 1996 Chicago Bulls basketball team is widely considered the best of all time. They won 72 games in an 82-game season. They won the NBA championship that same year, capping off a string of three straight championship seasons. They had Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Steve Kerr, and a game plan that dominated the competition. Their 72 victories in a single season made NBA history at the time. No one had accomplished that feat. A record that enamored basketball fans for 20 years until it was tied and then broken by the 2016 Golden State Warriors. The Warriors won 73 games and put their own stamp on a record that many felt would never be matched. But that's the inevitable outcome of merely focusing on setting records. Once it's set, the next goal is to try to top it. Sometimes a record may be etched in the history books for decades. But sooner or later, that book needs reprinting with a new name on top of the list. In college football, Florida State University had a football great named Warrick Dunn run for nearly 4,000 yards in four seasons with Coach Bobby Bowden and the Seminoles. His record was thought of as untouchable. But 20 seasons later, FSU had a new running back named Dalvin Cook who topped 4,000 yards in just three seasons with the Seminoles. Sooner or later, records will be broken. And the great ones are those who find success while still pushing to enhance their character along the way. The true champions are the ones who are so well-rounded that their legacy doesn't depend on wins, losses, or accolades. It's a lesson I presented to a live audience not too long ago. May this excerpt provide clarity in your own ability to go from good to great. It's characteristic of greatness number 16. Records are made to be broken.
Here comes the Dookies! Look at this hustle! Are you kidding me? You gotta bring it to the All-American! You gotta bring it to the Superstar! You gotta bring it to the PCP! Oh, North Carolina Duke! Call your friends up!
Unbelievable enthusiasm, a passion, so much energy that you marvel at the fact that this guy's in his mid-70s, right? Mid-70s. But he loves what he does, and he loves the game of basketball that he gets to be involved in. See, Vital's history in basketball is actually quite interesting. As a little guy, he had an accident that caused him to lose one of his eyes. So he has a prosthetic eye. But Dick Vital, didn't matter. He loved the game of basketball so much he figured out how to do everything mostly to one side, so he could figure out, he could always see what he was doing, and then with the side that he couldn't see from, he had a strong sense of what he was supposed to be doing, and he was a good little basketball player. Good enough that he got a chance to play high school ball and ultimately to go to a college and actually, while there, start coaching. Because he realized basketball playing wasn't going to be his future. Coaching would be. He was sure of it. And he went pretty quickly. He went from a high school coach to within 10 years of being a high school coach, Dick Vital actually had an opportunity to rise up through the ranks, coach at a college, University of Detroit, and within, as I said, 10 years of being a high school coach, Dick Vital was actually introduced as the head basketball coach of the Detroit Pistons. And the Pistons, who weren't a very good team, were pretty sure that they had, with all of the enthusiasm, all the passion and energy he brought to coaching every day, that they had something special going on with Dick. Well, Dick brought everything he could, but it's tough. It's tough sometimes to bring a lot of passion to a bunch of guys who have to play the game 82 times a year, right? They grew tired pretty quickly of all of his energy and enthusiasm because they didn't want to hear it every day, especially as they were losing. And so it didn't take him long, actually just a little over a year and a half, before Dick Vital got the axe like so many other people do. They always say in coaching there's only two kinds of coaches, those who have been fired and those who are about to be fired. Dick, a year and a half into being an NBA coach, became in that first category, been fired. He was home. He was crushed. He didn't know what to do. And his dream had been taken away from him. Though he had a meteoric rise, he wasn't sure where he would go next when this fledgling little television network asked him if he would go broadcast the college basketball game. ESPN asked Dick if he would go do a sideline of a game. Now, neither Dick Vital nor ESPN were really well known at the time, but Dick actually, he accepted the offer. He went and became the face of college basketball. In fact, so popular did he become and so significant was he in the world of college sports, college basketball, that ultimately he would be inducted, as he was 3 years ago, into the Hall of Fame, the Basketball Hall of Fame, but not as a player, not as a coach, the two things he enjoyed most. He was inducted in the Hall of Fame as a broadcaster because what he did and the way the game was shaped by all of his actions and activities was so significant that the Hall of Fame recognized him as one of the most important people in the sport. And Dick Vital, Hall of Famer, he's now, but on his way to making his through the ESPN ranks, he got paired on several games early on with another fired coach, a guy by the name of Jim Valvano. Vital and Valvano, it was like all the Italian you could manage, right? You know, all the pasta you could bring to a Saturday night game. The two of them, they did Paisano all night long. It was pretty fun. And for those of us who enjoy watching the sport, listening to the two of them banter back and forth was over the top, enjoyable. Well, a few years after the relationship began, the two of them got so close that one night Dick got a phone call and Jim Valvano called him to become the first person with whom he shared, horrific news. He had learned that he hadn't been feeling well, and it was a form of cancer that was in stage 4, and that there was no hope. He was not going to make it. ESPN decided, you know what? We're going to we're going to try to, we want to do something. We have this really powerful personality, Jim Valvano. We're going to do something. And they actually worked together with Valvano's family to create the V Foundation. And they actually held a dinner. It was the last time Jim Valvano got a chance to get up and speak for a few minutes. And in doing that, actually sitting right next to him as he was getting ready to get up, right across the aisle, was his close friend, Dick Vitale, who was enormously impacted.
I think that he's just going to simply say thank you and sit down. And I'm standing up there with him as he's going on for 25, 30 minutes and just mesmerized, electrified that crowd.
I urge all of you, to enjoy your life, the precious moments you have, to spend each day with some laughter and some thought, to get your emotions going, to be enthusiastic every day.
Don't give up. Don't ever give up. And that's what I'm going to try to do. Every minute that I have left, I will thank God for the day, for the moment I have.
Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul.
Out of that foundation became an unbelievably powerful force, a force that has, over the last 15 years, done incredible things in the fight against cancer. The V Foundation has become one of the most rapidly growing fundraising organizations in the fight against that horrific disease. And at the very heart of that foundation, the very center of its fundraising, as you might imagine, is Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale actually and his wife Lorraine have this unique perspective. See, it's fascinating to me. I don't know how many of you, some of you might remember a couple of years ago, I shared with you that I'm a cancer survivor. But I don't know how many of you can raise your hand and answer this question. Is there anyone in this room who has no one in your life, no one that you're close to that's ever been touched by cancer? Anybody that can raise their hand and say, no one you know has ever been touched by cancer? No one you're close to. Family-wise, excuse me, and you're just in your family. Pretty incredible. Almost no one in this room, I guess no one in this room can raise their hand. And so it blew me away when I learned that outside of that relationship with Jim Valvano, Dick Vitale had no one in his life. No one in his family has ever been touched by that disease. That's incredible, because that's really hard to imagine, right? I mean, the disease is so pervasive and it's touched so many of our lives in some way that Dick Vitale has no one in his family that's ever gone through that. He's never experienced it as a family member. And yet, he decided to throw himself wholeheartedly into this fight, not just because of his friend. His friend was important to him, and he was working along on raising a little bit of money for it. But then, a couple of years later, Dick Vitale was at his home in Sarasota, and there was a knock on the door. It was a neighbor who said, Dick, I know you just hosted an event a couple of weeks ago to raise money for this V Foundation thing, but we've got a more immediate need. We've got a need right here in our neighborhood. We need your help. And the neighbor said that there was a little girl around the corner who had been diagnosed with a brain tumor, and the little girl's father, who was very successful, was going to have to quit his job because they wanted to devote every moment they could to her care, and there was all these challenges that were coming with it. And the neighbor said, Dick, could you do something? You have this amazing network. Could you do something to help this little girl and her family? Dick Vitale admits that when that first request came, his reaction was, no, really, honestly, I don't want to get to that. I don't want to be that guy that every time you take my phone call, it's because I'm asking you for money. So please, please, don't put me in this place. I just did this. I just raised a bunch of money for the V Foundation. The neighbor said, I get it. You know, we're all busy, and I understand you don't want to tap your network one more time. And Dick Vitale said, thank you. I appreciate that. Well, 2 days later, there was a knock on the door, and it was the mother and the little girl that came over to visit. And Dick Vitale fell in love. This little girl, Peyton Wright, changed the dynamic of their life. Dick decided, you know what? I get it. I've done what I've done, but it's for a guy who's passed. Maybe now I can do something for someone who's here. And he started working like crazy to help Peyton Wright.
It's a cause that affects all of us, and certainly Peyton's legacy is going to go on and help other kids. My goal for the V Foundation is pediatric cancer, to raise another million. My heart goes out to the Wrights. Here they are, I lost a child, but yet they're working so hard to help others.
Little Peyton Wright's picture is on Dick Vitale's dashboard. He thinks about her every day. And he changed he changed exactly what he was all about. And he said, you know what, I don't just want to raise money for the V Foundation. I want to raise money for pediatric cancer. I want to take and do what I do, what I've already committed myself to doing, and I want it to be more targeted, more specific, and I want it to be aimed at what an experience he was just going through very passionately, very personally. And interestingly, Dick Vitale went on, and now he hosts an event every year. I get a chance to attend it down in Sarasota. And every year, Dick Vitale is out there, and he brings the Wrights in with him. And together, they have raised almost $7 million in the last 4 years. And they're doing terrific things in the support of pediatric cancer, the fight against pediatric cancer. So he took this big macro lesson from a friend and a paisano, a guy who had lived a great life, and he adopted that first. But then when it became personal, when it became something right there in his neighborhood, Dick Vitale decided that what he wanted his legacy to be had nothing to do with the Hall of Fame, had nothing to do with the many games he lost when he was a head basketball coach at the Detroit Pistons. It had nothing to do with the many books he signed and written. He wanted his legacy to be changing the dynamic for parents who have children who are fighting this disease. And he has done it. Dick Vitale's legacy, his fame, is about basketball and about television, and it's about and it includes a bust at the Hall of Fame. But his legacy is changing the life of families who are working in this terrific arena. Amazing to me that Dick Vitale has no reason. I mean, again, he has no personal connection, family-wise, to this disease. And yet he has chosen to make this his legacy. Because Dick Vitale has realized that this is the last of the 16 characteristics when we talk about it. And again, we haven't done these all in order, but the 16th and most important one of the most important characteristics of every great winner is that they realize that their legacy, that records are made to be broken, right? Every record that you have, everything you've done that might end up on a wall or on some list of achievements, every record will be topped by somebody else. I know barely an athlete out there who believes that their records will make them immortal. This makes you immortal. But the truly great ones have an appreciation of their legacy. It's bigger than what can appear on a wall. Truly great ones have an appreciation of their legacy and an understanding of its importance, and they're working on it every day. They're working on their legacy now. The truly great ones are committed to that because they understand the importance that delivers in their holistic look at greatness.
Dick Vitale will never be remembered as a wins and losses kind of guy. In fact, he didn't gain popularity from his playing career or his coaching career. It's the Dickie V personality that created a memorable legacy. It's his constant push to be well-rounded, his consistent drive to help others that continues to cement his legacy. He didn't get a basketball court named in his honor because he won a set number of trophies, but his signature is in the Basketball Hall of Fame because he focused on more than just the record books. I encourage you to take time and reflect on where your focus currently is. Are you missing out on your true greatness by having tunnel vision? On filling up your trophy case? How do you want to be remembered? Better yet, is your pride and self-worth attached solely to some momentary accomplishment that will eventually be matched and probably forgotten? Shooting for record-setting success is good, but helping others and building a legacy while doing it, now that is greatness. That's also characteristic of greatness number 16. Records are made to be broken.